This is the Bob Soucy Show on Patriots.com Radio.
Perrine in the backfield off Brady's left hip. Amendola starts it in motion. Brady takes the snap. Rolls right, throws to the end zone. Catches Brady. Touchdown, Danny Amendola!
The Bob Soucy Show is your source for in-depth Patriots coverage and all things NFL. Join Bob for exclusive interviews, statistical breakdowns, and the best coverage of your New England Patriots.
Gostowski trying to win it in overtime. The snap, the spot, the kick is airborne to the upright, and the kick is a game winner!
Join the conversation by calling the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
Left foot forward for the quarterback, hands extend, takes the snap, retreats in the pocket, under a rush, throws across the middle, touchdown, Rob Gronkowski!
Now, here's your host, the radio voice of your New England Patriots, Bob Soucy.
And hello again, everyone. We welcome you inside our Subway Fresh broadcast studios at Gillette Stadium for another edition of the Bob Soucy Show. And, of course, this week, a welcomed edition following the Patriots' rout of the Cincinnati Bengals after last week's rather laborious trek through the recap of the Kansas City Chiefs' win over the Pats at Monday Night Football. And certainly a big bounce back for New England as the Patriots played at Gillette Stadium is charged up as it's been, at least in the last year plus during my time calling games for the Patriots on radio, on the Patriots Radio Network, along with Scott Zolak. And throughout the game, no doubt about it, a lot of energy. The fans fueled the team, the Patriots as well, fed it right back to those in the stands. Tom Brady surpassing 50,000 yards for his career with a 27-yard completion to Rob Gronkowski. The quarterback, though, with two tone-setting completions on that first drive, hooking up with Brandon LaFell and Tim Wright. They combined for 50 yards downfield with those two catches. Stephen Ridley ran it strong up the middle, and eventually the Patriots, in fact, with a Brady quarterback sneak on a 4th-and-1, setting up New England with a goal to go, scored first against Cincinnati and then scored again 14-0. After Brady hooked up with Wright for a 17-yard completion. Tim Wright and Rob Gronkowski, each with an impact, combined 185 yards receiving from those two tight ends, each with a score. Mention the Gronkowski milestone catch on a throw by Brady, who got off to a terrific start in the game. And all those guys did their work. Ridley ran for 100-plus yards. Shane Vereen had a productive day rushing for 90. And giving the Patriots really a two-headed offensive attack on the ground, in that you had Ridley with the north-south running, and as well some big runs on the edge, the stretch plays, getting around the corner. And then you had Vereen running out of passing sets, or at least shotgun formations, and using some delays and draws for big yards, including a huge 3rd-and-16 pickup on a 19-yard run. All that work done thanks to the five guys in front of Brady, the offensive line, who certainly as a unit played their best game up against a Cincinnati defense that had allowed only 33 points, 11 per contest through the first three games of the year, enabling the Bengals to be the last unbeaten team in the NFL standing, of course, until Sunday night when the Patriots beat them going away at Gillette Stadium. Of course, this Patriots team will be tested once again this week by a division foe in the Buffalo Bills, brimming with confidence, celebrating the transition from one era to another. They're calling it a reopener at Ralph Wilson Stadium. And, of course, the late patriarch for the Bills, the man for whom that stadium is named, Ralph Wilson, passed away in the spring at the age of 95. And today, his successor officially took over. Terry Pegula, approved unanimously by fellow NFL owners. Terry Pegula paying $1.4 billion for the Buffalo franchise. Pegula with a strong foundation in Buffalo as the owner of the Buffalo Sabres, someone who's built a massive hockey complex in downtown Buffalo, and now will explore ways for either to massively renovate Ralph Wilson Stadium or, in fact, relocate the Bills back within city limits and move from Orchard Park to downtown Buffalo. That's on the horizon, and more so for Bills fans after a string of losing seasons and several consecutive finishes with 10 losses. Buffalo now looking for Sunday to be a watershed game, taking on the Patriots, each at 3-2. The Bills coming off a come-from-behind win over the Detroit Lions with a 58-yard field goal by Carpenter to seal it at the end after Alex Henry of Detroit missed three field goal tries. And, of course, with Kyle Orton making his first start as the new quarterback of the Bills, replacing the second-year youngster E.J. Manuel. Or incompleted passes to 10 different receivers, including a 20-yarder on a sensational grab by the rookie out of Clemson, the 4th overall pick in this year's draft, Sammy Watkins, to set up that game-winning field goal by Carpenter. And when you look at Watkins and some of the complementary parts in the receiving core, and then look at the backfield with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson, who throughout their careers, Jackson's, of course, longer than Spiller, have been among the best dual threats in any NFL backfield. Certainly this Buffalo team is loaded at the skill positions offensively. Coming into this season, the Bills needed an offensive line to protect the quarterback. They have shored up that front, it seems, and they needed a quarterback to provide consistency. Well, E.J. Manuel had a difficult time doing that, and thus Kyle Orton, the 10-year veteran, who in fact was at his best when he was playing under current Patriot offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels with the Denver Broncos, gets the start this Sunday against the Patriots. Start number 2 for Orton, and again for the Buffalo Bills, to go with a very good defense, even better against the run now with new coordinator Jim Schwartz than the Bills were a year ago when they led the AFC in sacks and interceptions. It's going to be a very formidable test for the Patriots, playing in a loud environment, even more raucous than usual at Orchard Park's Ralph Wilson Stadium this Sunday, because the Bills fans, while they may not number the same kind of neighborhood as teams like the Patriots, who, of course, as you well know, have a following across the globe and throughout New England specifically. Nonetheless, those who show up when the Patriots are in town in Buffalo are very, very passionate. It is a very diehard fan base, and the hardcore Bills fans no doubt have to be very encouraged by what they have seen more recently with the Bills' play against Detroit last week, coupled with a divisional win over the Miami Dolphins in dominant fashion earlier this year, and in addition, a season-opening victory against the Chicago Bears. All those things, as well as the excitement now of a new owner with deep pockets and a commitment to Buffalo. There was a lot of concern, of course, when the Bills went up for sale with the passing of Ralph Wilson in the spring, in particular with the interest by the Toronto-based group, spearheaded by the Rogers Communications folk, as well as the Toronto Maple Leafs ownership group and rock star Jon Bon Jovi. There was fear that the Bills could be on their way out of Buffalo eventually if that group took control. Well, somebody again who has strong ties to the city, Terry Pegula, owner of the Sabres, purchasing the Bills for $1.4 billion. And today approved unanimously by NFL owners at the NFL owner meetings in New York City. We'll talk later today with John Murphy, the voice of the Bills, about that very topic, and as well the on-field performance of the Bills thus far. We'll also have a chance to hear from Terry Pegula. He spoke very briefly today, and at least we'll hear a portion of his comments. He said it was indeed a fantastic deal for him, even after ponying up the largest figure ever in the sale of an NFL franchise, $1.4 billion, and if not mistaken, and when Ralph Wilson founded the Bills and purchased the franchise as the patriarch of the team and one of the members of the Foolish Club, the founders of the AFL, he did so for $25,000. And, of course, his family now benefiting from the sale in a big way. Speaking of the Patriots, though, and Cincinnati, what a performance by the Pats all the way around. And when you look at the way they played last Sunday night against a team that came in at 3-0 with a bye week to prepare, the Patriots, of course, with a short week in preparation, coming off a lopsided loss, the most lopsided loss for the Pats since that 31-0 defeat to the Buffalo Bills to open the 2003 campaign. We noted the opening drive for the Patriots, setting the tone. Again, a balanced attack. Ridley's running, Brady's passing. In fact, Brady's scrambling as well. He set up that first score with a dash out of the pocket and then converted on a 4th-and-1 to set up a goal to go for the Patriots. And Kevin Collins was on hand. Kevin certainly plays a big role on all of our programming on Patriots.com as the producer of this show, and also does a great job with the in-stadium entertainment at Gillette Stadium. And Kevin, I said certainly the loudest I've heard Gillette in my year plus two home games as the radio broadcaster for the team. It certainly was electric last year at the conclusion of several games, most notably New Orleans, yep, Denver, and Cleveland. But from the outset, the fans at Gillette were into it in a big way Sunday night.
Yeah, I think this was the most consistent crowd we had, Bob, in terms of start of the game to finish. I think a lot of the games that you referenced last year, notably New Orleans and Denver, involved large Patriot comebacks, where the few that were left were very rowdy, but there were a lot of empty seats at the end of those games. People that unfortunately gave up on the team and that were trying to beat the traffic. You know, this past Sunday, they were loud from, 10 minutes before the game when we did the anthem, and they were loud throughout. And it was very encouraging to see. And it wasn't just, I'll say, us here locally that recognized those things. I know on the NBC broadcast, Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth, there were a lot of national folks in attendance as well that recognized this wasn't your run-of-the-mill New England crowd.
And I think the crowd certainly recognized what had been going on in New England in the previous 5 days. The Patriots coming off that lopsided loss, the questions being posed, the speculation being reported, the future of the Patriots called into question, some on national television, including the ESPN crew last Monday night, not necessarily the game crew, but the commentators on the pre- and post-game show, taking shots at the organization, at Bill Belichick, openly questioning the future of Tom Brady with this organization, many across the country and even in local circles in a big way questioning Brady's state and his status as one of the game's elite. He was even asked if indeed he felt his play was in decline last Wednesday. He was in the firing line of questions during his press conference midweek last week. And did those fans send a resounding message with the chant of Brady?
Yeah, repeatedly throughout the game, too, which was very impressive. And I know, you know, speaking of kind of the underdog mentality, we go through our picks every Thursday with the PFW guys, and we watched the line move throughout the week, where the Patriots were originally, when the line came out, a favorite, a 2.5-point favorite, to all the way to a 3-point underdog. So that landslide, that sort of avalanche that the team seemed to be trapped under all week, it was good to see that it didn't come to fruition on Sunday night. And the fans, I think, to a man, you know, a lot of them call in Patriots.com radio during the week. They, to a man, reiterated this week that, you know, I think a lot of people felt for the first time in a long time, this team really needs us. Whereas in past years, they've been so good, you know, it's just kind of show up and watch the beatdown that they give the other team. Whereas this game, I think, they really got a sense of these guys, these 53 guys out there really need our help. And I think that was a pretty cool thing to be a part of on Sunday.
Yeah, look, it wasn't flawless. The Patriots, as a team, and even Brady individually,
too many penalties.
Didn't play a perfect game by any stretch. And you're right, too many penalties. When you look at the negative stats for the Pats, 12 penalties, 114 yards, a couple of personal fouls, including one on linebacker Jamie Collins in special teams, tackling former Patriot Braden Tate after signaling for a fair catch. The penalty on Rob Gronkowski, seemingly retaliating when Reggie Nelson of the Bengals came up and gave Gronk a shove, and Gronk was called with a personal foul for a headbutt, it seemed, after the play. The defensive holding calls, the illegal contact calls against the Patriots, and yet at the same time, there were certainly some borderline calls at best and some borderline non-calls. Julian Edelman got hit hard out of bounds, seemingly late, for example. The defensive penalty on Darrell Revis on an interception early in the game, a diving grab that would have been his second pick, certainly called into question legitimately so. And yet, at the same time, it wound up being poetic justice for the Patriots because New England had the 7-0 lead. Rather than an interception by Revis to give the Pats possession at the 5, eventually Cincinnati misses a field goal. Nugent leaves it short. The Patriots take over at the 42, and they navigate the 58 yards, a much shorter field, and score to have a 14-0 lead.
Yeah.
But you look at some of the positive numbers, too, Kevin. We mentioned the penalties and the 3-for-6 performance in the red zone, certainly of concern. Patriots settling for too many field goals once again. Steven Gostkowski performed admirably per usual. He's off to a perfect start year. And at 5 field goal performance, just one short of the franchise record. And when it comes to the Patriots as well, on the positive side, 220 yards rushing, nearly 5 yards per carry, 8 yards essentially, 7.9 per pass attempt. Brady got the ball downfield, as mentioned, to the two tight ends. We saw Tim Wright for the first time really be a factor in the game plan for the Patriots and respond in a big way. Even had some big blocks for the Pats, something that he's not known for as a former wide receiver converting to tight end. Gronk had the 6 reception, 100-yard performance. For the Pats as well, Shane Vereen, the 9 carries, 90 yards, including a 19-yarder on a 3rd and 16, but also giving the Pats 3 receptions in the contest. Stephen Ridley, his second 100-yard performance of the young campaign. And now the Patriots 39-1 in the last 40 games when they get a 100-yard performance. And, of course, sometimes that's reflective of simply being on top and having the lead and running the ball more frequently, but it was instrumental. The balanced attack, the power running by Ridley, his ability to get outside and make people miss at the same time, including breaking a 43-yarder around the corner with a nice move to deke the defense. And then, of course, the change of pace running by Shane Vereen and all the passing by Brady with the protection they got from the offensive line and the blocking they got from an offensive line that included Ryan Wendell making the start at guard along with Dan Connolly flanking the young center Brian Stork. All things told, a vastly improved performance by the Patriots offense, while the Patriots defense playing shorthanded without Dante Hightower and with a couple of other guys banged up a bit, including Chandler Jones, limited because of an apparent shoulder injury, and as well with Jamie Collins not playing at his best. Certainly a guy's been bothered lately by thigh problems. The Pats nonetheless held the Bengals 0 for 7 on third down attempts, and Cincinnati again really out of the contest early when the Patriots built a big lead, took a 14-0 advantage, later made it 20-3. When Cincinnati got within 20-10, the Patriots immediately came back with a rebuttal, Brady engineering a 10-play, 86-yard drive against that Cincinnati defense, a defense that had allowed only 11 points per game theretofore. Now, coming up today, as we look ahead to Buffalo and reflect a little bit more on the Cincinnati victory for the Pats, we're going to hear from Patriot safety Patrick Chung, the veteran back with New England in his second stint with the Pats. He'd been here for 4 years, went to Philadelphia last season as a free agent. Things didn't work out so well with the Eagles, but he's back with the Pats and making an impact not only from his safety spot, but for the Patriots playing on the special teams unit, including a new role for him as a kick returner for the Patriots. In addition, Scott Zolak, Jackie Britton, my partners on the Patriots Radio Network, as well as Patriots.com, and John Murphy, my counterpart from the Buffalo Bills, all on tap today. We hope you'll join us, too. Our number to call, 855-PATS-500, 855-PATS-500, or dial us up on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398, 508-298-0398, and you can email at webradio at patriots.com, webradio at patriots.com. We're going to hear from Patrick Chung momentarily, but first, we want to go back and re-listen to some of the highlights of Sunday night's win for the Pats, a thrashing of the Cincinnati Bengals by the 43-17 final.
All star. Offense, number 77.
Still caught up.
5-yard penalty. Still third down.
Jack it up.
It's the first time I've heard this place this loud in 2 years.
I haven't heard it this loud since show ponies.
We might bring that out tonight. It's great to have these night games. Get liquored up and make some noise.
Tom takes the shoulder high snap, pressured from his right, runs up the middle, runs across the 10, angles left, and hits the deck with a slide inside the 8.
And look at Brady pop up. You tell me this doesn't mean anything to him, that he's become complacent 15 years into it? Ah!
You know, we got off to a great start, so I think we talked about that all week. It was a long week for everybody, so we wanted to start fast, and we got ahead. We played from ahead for once. We ran the ball great.
High formation. Two man in motion right to left. Brady gives to Ridley. Up the middle. Into the end zone. Touchdown! Patriots!
Houdet! Big boy drive to start the game.
Brady with a play fake to Ridley. Throws down the middle. Catch is made by White. Tumbling in. Touchdown. Patriots.
You know, when you score, you're going to have emotion. When you give up scores and turn the ball over and don't do well, it's, you know, got to generate some plays to generate that. So, yeah, went down and scored. Of course, we're excited. We should be. It's hard to do in this league.
Brady in the gun. Takes the snap. Tom drops back. Pocket holds. Throws to Gronk. Across the middle. Breaks a tackle. Across the 30. Left sideline 20. Gronkowski takes the spill. Fitting way for Tom Brady to reach 50,000 yards passing in his career with a strike to Rob Gronkowski.
You know, like I said, I'm a lucky guy. 50,000 yards. Played in the best place, you know, in the league for a long time. Playing for the best owner and the best coach.
Shotgun snap to Tom. Throws down the middle for Gronk at the 5. Out of a tackle. Into the end zone. On his feet with a touchdown for the Patriots.
Smooth.
I told my brother before we came to the game, I go, I'm going to help. I'm going to make 12 look like Tom Brady again today, baby. And I went out there with my teammates, and we made Tom Brady look like Tom Brady after you guys were criticizing him all week. The fans, everything. And it feels so good, and he's such a leader. And he went over 50,000 yards today. He's an unbelievable player, and I'm so glad to play with him.
The Patriots can celebrate the final 20 seconds. Well, after all, the sky did not fall on Foxborough this week. New England comes back after the loss to Kansas City and thrashes Cincinnati by a 43-17 final. Great job by producer Kevin Collins with a montage from last Sunday night. The Patriots 43-17 final over Cincinnati. As noted, you heard from Tom Brady. Tom, terrific, certainly, at the start of that game. And with the 50,000 yards passing, a remarkable milestone. He was presented the game ball in the locker room by head coach Bill Belichick afterwards. Belichick, in fact, saying to the team, we're not big about individual stats around here, but nonetheless, 50,000 yards meriting a game ball in the very least. But more important for the Patriots, they get the win over Cincinnati, an AFC foe, and of course the Bengals, a team that many were pointing to as the best in the conference through the first 4 weeks of the campaign. Well, in week 5, the Patriots, who many were saying were in the midst of their demise, which, as it turns out, was grossly exaggerated. So the Patriots win it over Cincinnati in a big way last Sunday night. When we come back, we'll talk more about that game and, of course, look ahead to this Sunday afternoon's performance for the Pats in Orchard Park against the Buffalo Bills. And remember our lineup today, Patrick Chung, Scott Zolak, Jackie Britton, John Murphy, broadcaster for the Bills. All coming your way next here on Patriots.com.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99 at a Microsoft store near you.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com Radio.
Tom takes the step, throwing to the near side, catch is made by Vereen, and he's in for a Patriots touchdown!
Have a hot Patriots take? Call Bob on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We get to this afternoon's injury report from the Patriots and Buffalo Bills practices. The Pats today again without Nate Ebner and Cameron Fleming, both of whom were inactive last week for the victory over the Cincinnati Bengals, neither participating today. Ebner and Fleming with a finger injury each. Cameron, of course, has started for the Patriots as a tight end and extra tackle there, and then made the start at guard against Kansas City, whereas Ebner as well is a guy very instrumental for the Patriots in special teams. Nate has played more this season as well defensively in the secondary as an extra safety, but both inactive again today in practice after being inactive for the Patriots against the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday night. In addition, with limited participation today for the Pats, Jamie Collins with a thigh, Dont'a Hightower with a knee, he of course was kept out of the game Sunday night, Chandler Jones with a shoulder. It was reported that he was wearing a bit of a brace on his shoulder on Sunday night as well. Devin McCourty, the safety for the Patriots, who left the game between New England and Cincinnati with a rib injury, limited participation for him today. And Matthew Slater, the special team standout, with a shoulder injury, limited participation today for the Patriots. And then there's one more. Dominique Easley, the rookie defensive lineman, bothered by injury that forced him out of the game on Sunday night, a shoulder ailment in addition, of course, to the knee that he's been rehabbing since the end of last year and recovering from. Dominique Easley, drafted by the Patriots out of the University of Florida, coming off a season-ending torn ACL a year ago as a Florida Gator and playing his way onto the field for the Pats. And he was playing significant minutes early in Sunday's game, but left with what was reported as a shoulder injury. And now Jeff Howe of the Boston Herald is reporting that Dominique Easley suffered an AC joint separation in his right shoulder against the Bengals, according to a source. Jeff writes, there's some early week optimism that he can play Sunday against the Bills, but the call will be officially made later in the week. So again, that's the report out of the Boston Herald. Jeff Howe, as good as it gets in that locker room and on the Patriots beat, reporting that Dominique Easley has an AC joint separation. And of course, we'll stay tuned, and you will too, to the news regarding the Pats on the injury front. As for the Buffalo Bills, the only non-participant today in practice, wide receiver Marcus Easley. Bills did miss Kyle Williams, their defensive tackle, last week at Detroit. He had limited participation today, so at least that's an encouraging sign for Buffalo. Also, Brandon Spikes, the former Patriot, now a team captain for the Bills, and linebacker, limited today. Brandon Spikes, as we know, last year with a knee injury for the Pats, and right now dealing with a rib issue for the Buffalo Bills. Well, one Patriot who had a full day's worth of practice today was Patrick Chung, and afterwards we had a chance to catch up to him in the locker room. Patrick, of course, a former Patriot and once and again a New England Patriot. He played with the Pats as a second-round pick out of the University of Oregon. After 4 years, signed as a free agent with the Philadelphia Eagles last season. That means 5 years in the NFL and five postseason appearances for Patrick Chung, and now try to make it a sixth in a row, back with his former and once again team as a free agent signee by the Pats in the spring. Interesting guy off the field, though. Patrick Chung hails from a musically oriented family. His dad is a music producer, his mother a reggae singer. Comes from a big family, born in Jamaica, moved to California as a young kid, and took a liking to football, but still maintains a passionate interest in music. And Patrick Chung has started a foundation, Chung Changing Lives, that's given back to the community in a different way than we normally associate with professional athletes. So many, of course, do it through athletic endeavors or things related to athletics in and of itself. But in the case of Patrick Chung, here is someone who's giving back through the arts and certainly has an interest in trying to help youngsters become more well-balanced in the community. And he spoke a bit today about the Chung Changing Lives Foundation.
Our foundation is called Chung Changing Lives, and it's geared to better kids athletically, academically, and in the arts, pretty much, and bring arts back into school. You know, we start with music. You know, we're going to do football camps and stuff like that. We start with music, a summer music academy for kids, and it's a six-week program, and pretty much they learn how to play instruments, learn how to write lyrics, read music, produce video, music on video, so kind of everything, just kind of bettering kids. And, you know, kids, they don't really have an opportunity like some don't have opportunities, so kind of just give all kids an equal opportunity to pretty much display their talents.
your interest, certainly reflective of your background, your father a producer, your mother a reggae singer. What kind of balance did you have in your life between the arts, athletics, and academics to want to give back in this particular way?
You know, my generation, we used to play outside and go out and do all sorts of stuff. Now people are playing video games all day, so we're trying to get kids from playing video games all day and kind of having that, you know, what I got music, I had soccer, I had track, you know, being my parents were athletic, so there was a lot of playing. You know, I had my sisters, and, you know, sisters used to play all the time. You know, my mom was a singer, and, you know, we love music. I love all types of music, country, rap, rock, it's kind of everything, and kind of just trying to do that same thing to kids now, because you know how it is now. Kids just want to play video games all day, and you're not going to get better. You're not doing anything constructive, so we're trying to, like, kind of mature kids a little bit, I guess, just to help them out so they're doing other things instead of just playing video games. They can go out and better themselves, maybe help better someone else at a young age. And once you get that instilled in your young age, it's much easier for you to develop when you're older.
And you've had an annual jam session. You just had your second this past summer. How much of the kids shown to you in terms of their development, their interest in it? How have they given back to you in their performances? What have you discovered by it?
Very good. And on top of them learning music and performing, they also create bonds and relationships with other kids. Like, there's kids there that last year went to the camp and now they're working for BCNC. You know, so it's good to see. And all the kids came back. It's good to see all the kids come back. And from the beginning of the program to the end, I mean, they're performing. At first, they're learning, you know, kind of getting into it, learning the instrument, and they kind of get, I don't want to say forced, but pushed to learn new things. And they display them after 6 weeks, and it was good. There's a lot of kids just learning music and learning how to play. There's this kid, I forget his name. He was playing the piano. And he was, I want to say it might have been 10, 11, and he killed it. And I never knew he knew how to play a piano until that jam session. So, like, little things like that, surprising, like, see the kind of talents these kids have. I like it. I like it a lot.
We're joined by Patrick Chung, Patriot Safety, of course, in his second stint with the organization, talking about Chung changing lives, and in particular his outreach program to touch kids through the arts as well as academics and athletics. And when one talks about that foundation, was it something that you envisioned long ago, the genesis of it? But did you say, when I get to the NFL, I want to do this? Or was it a matter of getting here, establishing yourself, and then coming up with this idea?
I would say getting and establishing. You know, I was blessed to have people around me to help me, you know, because I was kind of when you're growing up, you're a little wacky, you know, so I was lucky enough to have people to help me out, and I'm just trying to do that now, and I had to establish myself so I can help other people. You know, I had to help myself first before I could help anybody else. So it was kind of, you know, football's going well, you know, I'm blessed, you know, with certain things in my life, and, you know, now it's kind of trying to help somebody else that needs it.
I have read in an official team publication that you're not necessarily talented in music. Is that true? Is that fair to say?
I'm not.
That while you come from a musical family, that in terms of singing, not one of your strong suits.
Sing, yeah. I mean, I write music. I used to play the piano. I write music. I'm more like hip hop, you know, like telling stories about my life, and it's kind of like a stress reliever for me a little bit. You know, happy day, bad day, sad day, you just kind of write about it and just, you know, it makes you feel a little better. It helps me out.
Well, there's two reasons for that. One, I guess, is it an outlet for you simply Absolutely. To have the interest in music, Absolutely. Number one?
I think music is a great outlet, you know, even on the radio. Some days you might have a real bad day and you might hear the perfect song to come on the radio and you're like, why am I mad right now, you know, and then just go on with your life. I feel it's a great outlet, honestly.
And the second part of it is, who in this locker room is the most talented? Or if you had to start a group and go on the road with a bunch of guys, who would you like to have to lead off?
I go Do or Vince. They can play the piano pretty good. I'm gonna go Mayo. He can mix a little bit, produce a little bit. Who knows how to play it? Yeah, I'm gonna go with those three right there. I got my producer, I got my pianist, and I'm good right there. I think. Oh, Chandler likes to sing too. Watch, I listen to this. Am I wrong? or he didn't hear. That's all he sings all day. Yeah, I do. I would go those guys.
You said you've got a pretty eclectic song list or taste in music. What do you listen to get pumped up for a game?
For a game, I'd go hip-hop or rap, maybe some rock, maybe a little bit, but yeah, I'd say game did that, hip-hop or rock or something, but just driving around, kind of listen, whatever has a story, whatever has something where I can listen to what they're saying and the lyrics, I like stuff like that. I don't just listen to the beat. Everybody listens to the beat nowadays. I like to hear what we're saying.
Another fascinating part of your story, Patrick Chung, is the fact that you were born in Jamaica, came to the United States at the age of 12, moved to California. When and how did you get interested in football?
I played soccer. I was on the swim team in Jamaica, and I just tried it. My dad was like, "Yeah, go ahead." And my mom was like, "How about you just keep swimming?" No, I'm like, "No, I want to try it out." And then it was kind of just tried it freshman year of football, and then I just fell in love with it, I guess, and I love it now. I'm guessing it was the right decision, so it was good.
It certainly seems to be, to say the least.
Yeah.
And you played at Oregon. You played all 51 games, set a record for a defensive player there, were an impact player on special teams, and were part of that program's ascent on a national level. What was that experience like, and how did it affect the professional you became?
I love Oregon, man. I mean, I would say Velotti and Coach Neal they put me in a lot of different situations, and I honestly believe that helped me now with the NFL, because you have to be able to do a lot of things in the NFL. You can't just be one-dimensional. You got to be able to cover kicks. You got to be able to maybe return kicks. You got to be able to cover tight end receivers. And at Oregon, like, all the defensive backs did that, so it helped me out. It helped me out a lot.
And you're returning kicks now as a Patriot. How do you like that experience?
That's fun. It reminds me a little bit of college, so that's got to keep it going now.
And, of course, this is your second stint with the team. As noted, drafted by the Pats. You played here 4 years. You went to Philadelphia, and you've come back. When you were in the process of choosing a new team in this past offseason, and you eventually signed with the Patriots, what lured you back to New England? And was it a case in some respects of the grass not always being greener on the other side?
They chose me. You know, it's not like college where you get a scholarship, you get the pick. It's kind of like, all right, I'm going to keep working out. I'm just waiting. And then when I got the calls, let's do it. Now, very familiar. Bill's awesome. All the people I've played with for years are here. City's good. City was good to me. I like Boston. My family's here, so it was, like, perfect. As soon as I got the call, I was like, I'm good with that.
A lot was made last year when Chip Kelly took over the Eagles about some of the innovations in sports science, nutrition, the conditioning work, the style of play. Do you take any of that with you on the road now that you're a Patriot again?
Even when I was a Patriot before, it's kind of the same thing. It's just make sure you're hydrated, you know, stretch, cold tub. It's just a matter of doing it consistently, you know. And I've learned since my rookie year that you have to do certain things. You have to do a lot of things to take care of your body. And here it's more of a, you know, you got to be a man about it and do it, you know. And Chip, he's more like more advanced in the crazy stuff. But, I mean, it pretty much boils down to do the same thing. Just make sure you're fresh, you know. And I think trainers here and the strength coaches here have us right as far as what we need to do to make sure our bodies are fresh.
Our last couple of minutes with Patrick Chung. You played here before, as noted. Did you ever experience a crowd as into it, as energetic as last Sunday night against Cincinnati?
I love our fans, man. I love our fans. And, you know, sometimes they hate us, but it's still love. You know, it's kind of like having brother or sister. I love it. They're very supportive, man. Even when it's not looking good, they're still supporting it. They might have a couple people every once in a while, but, I mean, that comes with the territory. But I love our fans, man. And when we play consistently and play at a time, and they start getting wild, it helps us a lot.
Strong performance, to say the least, to set you up for Buffalo, another division foe, and the Bills are playing well. Kyle Orton at quarterback, what kind of difference maker was he last week in the second half against the Lions?
He's a quarterback, man. Well, you can say what you want to say about him. He's going to make the right throws. He's going to get the ball to the right people, and it's going to be in the area where the receiver is going to have a great opportunity to catch the ball. You know, it's not going to be a lot of mistakes. He's a very smart veteran quarterback, and he has a lot of weapons around him also, with the running backs, the receivers, and Chandler, the tight end, lead tight end. I mean, they have a very good team, and you have a veteran quarterback come in, and he's very good.
You mentioned the two backs, referencing Spiller and Fred Jackson.
They're good. Two totally different backs, but very explosive and can make some plays.
And how about Sammy Watkins in particular in that receiving corps?
They're all good, man. They all have their different things they're good at, but unless they're good. You know, they're going to make some plays, and Kyle, whether it's Kyle or EJ, EJ is good too. He can create second opportunities. So whether any of those two in there, I mean, once the ball gets in those receivers' hands, running backs' hands, they can do some damage if we're not ready.
Well, it's on to Buffalo for your Patriots Sunday. We appreciate your time today. I know you got to go pick up your little one now. So, Patrick Chung, Changing Lives, the Foundation. Thanks so much for your time.
No, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
And again, Patrick Chung, veteran safety for the Patriots, and a guy, in fact, on Sunday night, as Mike Reese pointed out today on ESPNBoston.com, expanded his special teams role for the Patriots. Someone we've seen, of course, make special teams plays for the Pats in the past. Had a huge night several years ago against the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. And this season has been returning kicks for the Patriots and playing on several of the cover units, but he also became the personal protector for punter Ryan Allen Sunday against Cincinnati in the absence of Nate Ebner. Ebner, again, one of those core special teamers, and Patrick Chung's value for the Patriots, not only as a defensive back in the eyes of Bill Belichick when New England re-signed him, or signed him as a free agent this past offseason, and again brought him back to the Pats, but also understood that Chung, going back to his collegiate days at Oregon, as referenced during our interview, is someone with a lot of special teams reps under his belt. And again, on Sunday night against Cincinnati, he was in that critical role for communicating with the punting unit and setting up the protection for Ryan Allen. And for the Patriots, again, moving forward, we note that Nate Ebner did not practice today, so it remains a very strong possibility, at least based on today's absence for Ebner, that Patrick Chung will be back in that pivotal role on special teams, yet another way to contribute to the team on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. And speaking of the Bills and special teams, by the way, we've talked about C.J. Spiller so much over the course of just my year plus in broadcasting with Scott Zolak on the Patriots Radio Network, and Bill Belichick has often talked about both Spiller and Fred Jackson, certainly two guys that warrant the attention of the entire Patriots team this Sunday afternoon. Not only is two guys who are dual threats running the ball and catching the ball out of the backfield, but in the case of Spiller, he was very instrumental in a route for the Buffalo Bills against the Miami Dolphins. Now, it wasn't on a punt return, but he had a 102-yard kick return. And in that particular game, the Bills were getting a lot of field goals from Dan Carpenter, building an early lead over Miami, and then it was the Spiller kick return. Again, 102 yards that really was the spark to a route for Buffalo in week two of the season. The Bills out to the 2-0 beginning after winning at Chicago 23-20 in overtime, lost to San Diego 22-10 at home, and then went to Houston, took a big lead over the Texans earlier, at least had a 2-touchdown lead over the Texans early, could not maintain it, and fell by a 23-17 final. The turning point in that game was an interception return for a touchdown by J.J. Watt, and one of the reasons why E.J. Manuel was displaced at quarterback, the second-year QB of the Bills, giving way to the veteran Kyle Orton, a 10-year pro. And again, a guy with experience as a starter under Patriots offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels, while McDaniels was the head coach of the Denver Broncos in 2009 and 2010. So with Kyle Orton at quarterback, coming off 308 yards passing against the Detroit Lions this past Sunday, the Patriots know they've got a veteran who certainly has a lot of weapons at his disposal. The two running backs, Spiller and Jackson, and the Pats did a great job on C.J. Spiller in particular last year in the season opener, but nonetheless found themselves behind late in that game. And, of course, you may recall, had to rally in the fourth quarter to beat the Bills and salvage the season opener. Steven Gostkowski kicked the game-winning field goal with about 5 seconds left after Shane Vereen and Danny Amendola starred down the stretch along with Brady to lead New England to that win. It was a costly victory for the Patriots, as you'll recall, because Vereen broke his wrist during the game and Amendola suffered a groin injury that would have lingering effects on Danny and the Pats. So those two guys really, in a large way, gave up a big portion of their season, a big chunk of their season, to help the Patriots rally and beat the Bills in week one a year ago. And then, of course, the Patriots bookended the regular season. And it seems so often they've done that, playing Buffalo in the opener. And then, of course, the finale of the regular season, just as they did in 2003. And then last season, while the Patriots won the opener by a very narrow margin, they came back in Week 17 and beat Buffalo as the AFC champions, bound for a first-round bye in a pretty convincing way in the end. It was a close game. Thad Lewis played well as the Bills' quarterback of the day. He was filling in for an injured Manuel, and Buffalo was able to hang within striking distance. But the Patriots eventually pulled away, and they did it behind LeGarrette Blount, who was a force both running and returning. You may recall he nearly broke two kickoff returns for touchdowns, two long kickoff returns for the Pats, and of course had a huge day on the ground as well, in a way a precursor for what was to come the following contest for the Patriots 2 weeks later when they beat the Indianapolis Colts in a convincing way behind four touchdowns by LeGarrette Blount. Both of those games, the finale against Buffalo last regular season and the playoff game against Indianapolis, played in rainy conditions. The game against Buffalo in Week 17, frankly, was brutal. It was cold, windy, and rainy, and the Patriots got a big day from Blount, Stephen Gostkowski, who spent his earliest years of his childhood in the Buffalo area, had a huge day as well. And, of course, you know, Gostkowski came off a five-field goal performance last Sunday as he started preparation for this week's game in Buffalo at Orchard Park, where he hit one of his three game-winning field goals last season for the Pats in that season opener. In fact, we're going to take a listen back to the highlights of the 2013 season series between the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills momentarily. But, you know, as we look back at those two particular games, I want to recap some of the highlights. I mentioned the performance by Blount in Game 2 following the exploits of Vereen and Amendola in Game 1. We'll do that, of course, with a listen to some of their highlights. As mentioned, if not necessarily momentarily, then certainly before too long on the show. A little bit later, we'll be joined by Jackie Britton, my partner on Patriots Today and Patriots.com, as well as John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills. But first, we're going to welcome in my partner on the Patriots Radio Network and co-host of the Gresham Zoe Show from 10 to 2 each weekday on our flagship on the Patriots Radio Network and my friend and yours, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Zoe, how are you today?
What's going on, Bob?
Well, a lot better this week, isn't it, around Gillette Stadium than this time a week ago?
Heck yeah. It's like your kids that bring home A's, you know, as opposed to D's. You know, it's just makes everybody's life a lot easier.
Well, you know, you bring up the analogy with a grade report. What's your grade scale for last week? How did the Patriots grade out?
I thought they responded well. I mean, you know, I talked with you a lot about this, especially in the pregame. I know it's early, but it's early for a must-win game, and that's what I considered that. I really thought that, you know, they needed to get that one just to, not that they had to prove anything, but just for realistically where they really want to go. You know, I don't want to see an 8-8 season. Nobody there wants to see an 8-8 season. 8-8 seasons take you out of the running, and we know that every year they're in the running. So it's one of those games that they had to right the ship, and I thought they did that well up front. I liked what they did with putting Conley at left guard, Stork at center, you know, Wendell at right guard, and I think that kind of shored some things up in the middle, gave Brady a nice pocket. But more importantly, they ran the ball, and they did a nice job on the pulls, you know, the traps. And I thought the backs ran hard. Everybody ran hard. The play action was working. And saw Darrell Revis play a lot of man-to-man, and that's a good thing for that defense.
Hey, Zoe, when you talk about the pulling in particular and the Patriots running game and doing different things in the running game, really doing it with power running, but then as well some deception often out of passing sets.
Right.
How much do you think the factor of going in with the five guys, identifying who the offensive linemen were going to be at the outset and the opportunity to rep those guys in practice with veterans like Wendell and Connolly playing guard, how much of a factor was that?
I think that may be your three toughest guys in the middle. I think Stork's a tough guy. I think Wendell is underrated. He obviously had a really good game. And their ability to move people, I think that was the biggest thing is, you know, we're sitting there and you're watching white jerseys go backwards as opposed to that constant pressure was coming upfield and just hitting Brady play after play after play. But there's something to be said with continuity. That's a big part of it, too. But it came together for them. And you know, Coach Cooge gets a lot of credit for that, too. That's a guy that's taken a lot of heat through the first 4 weeks, and he did a good job coaching those guys up.
You know, there have been some analysts I've heard say that the Bengals really had a poor game plan, weren't set defensively, they were soft in the middle. Did you see it that way,
too? That's
their fault.
You know, if you're not set defensively, then that's a poor job of them getting coached. You know, there's no heightened sense of urgency. You know, it's a team that in the past has run turbo offense, that is running at a high pace. You've got a quarterback in his 15th year that can do that. Then that's ridiculous if that's, you know, if that's going to be an excuse that's made. That's a poorly coached team that wasn't ready to play. And also thought that they hit a lot after the whistle. I thought they were a dirty team.
Well, the one guy who responded certainly was the quarterback of the Pats, and you were very hyped up after his first run, and then his second, of course, was a sneak to set up a first and goal to go.
That's great, man. And that guy kind of, you know, I don't want to say he was unfairly criticized in the press, but hell yeah, he was unfairly criticized by fans, by people in the press. And, you know, when he's upright, he's as good as there is in the game. Now, is there some parts of the game that are perfect? Yeah, there are about four throws that I guarantee you he wish he could have had back, but nothing you can do about it. He's pretty good at putting bad games, bad plays behind him. And needless to say, you saw how Gronkowski responded and what his post game was like after that. You know, he wanted to play hard for him.
Yeah, Scott Zolak, our guest on the Bob Sosi Show on Patriots.com. Speaking of Gronk, he was certainly emotional in the locker room and also emotional on the field. He got a flag for personal foul, a little bit of retaliation after a lot of extra shoving and pushing, as you noted, following the whistle. But by showing that emotion, by playing the way he did, breaking a tackle, yep, in fat to score a touchdown, did you see the Gronk of old?
Yeah, I did, and I'm starting to, and I think that's a good thing. You just tell by the way he responds how excited he gets, and I think more importantly how his quarterback gets around him. That's a big thing, you know, and if he's responding well to him, then I think they're going to play well off each other.
How about the way Tim Wright plays off Gronk? What do you like about the two tight ends?
Starting to see it a little better now, starting to see the spacing. I liked how Wright set up the defenders with the routes. He got them going outside, then got vertical, but didn't stretch it too wide. I think, you know, the big thing with this passing game is it's all stretching and the guys getting the spots. And not that Wright wasn't doing that, but they're giving him the opportunity to. And I think he only had 19 snaps, but, you know, really important ones at that.
And so how about on the flip side? You mentioned Darrell Revis and the man-to-man really taking A.J. Green out of the game, and the one touchdown Green caught was when Revis went off to the sideline with a hamstring injury.
Yeah, you could feel almost the air come out of the building. Yeah, it looks like leaving a hot air balloon when he went down, and it didn't look good. He tried to get up, could not get up, had to have help. And you saw the guys, you know, with the knees down around him, and yeah, you always think the worst. And, you know, he had the knee before, and you know, it could be shoulder, could be hamstring. Hamstrings, you know, those are tough to come back from. But the big thing was he went down the locker room and you're thinking the worst and came back out and played. And they didn't play zone. They played man. I think that's a good sign moving forward.
Now, of course, the Pats coming off that game have to deal with the Bills Mafia.
No.
And they're going to be charged up. New owner today, unanimously approved. Bills 3-2. They've got confidence now that Kyle Orton passed for over 300 yards and led them to come from behind win over the Lions.
That's great. New owner and everything. The best thing, the best part of our job is that when that game's over, we get to leave Buffalo. I'll be looking forward to that plane ride on the way home. Wolves up, baby. You can't get those Wolves up fast enough. I've stated it since I played here. You know, it's nine of the worst trips that, you know, throughout those 9 years that you land and there's no leaves on the trees and you look around and it's like a tumbleweed village, you know, and you can't find any place to eat after 6 o'clock. Not that that's what trips are for, but I'll say it's one of the most prettiest cities on the East Coast, but they do have Niagara Falls up there, but technically that's not Buffalo. So I'll be looking forward to getting in and out of there. We'll consider this a nice quick trip, business trip.
Well, they got some good wings there, though.
Yeah, I got to get some good wings at Applebee's here, too. It's a hell of a lot cheaper. You ever have the wings down there at the Bass Pro Shop? Pretty damn good.
Spoken as only Scott Zolak can say it.
Right.
But they've got a couple of good backs, too. I mean, everybody talks about,
yeah,
Sammy Watkins, the rookie, but really for the Bills, I think the scary proposition defensively is that you got to deal with C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson in the backfield, two guys who can run it and catch it.
Sure, and that's the thing, too, is it's the misdirection. And you know, I think you got to read your keys, stay on your games, you know, listen to your assignments, because we've seen so much of the jet sweep, the reverses, and Buffalo runs a ton of that to kind of get the defense flowing one way, and they try and flip those guys, you know, out that back door. And they kind of got smoked by that at the beginning of that Minnesota game until they adjusted. So teams see that on tape, and, you know, most of the stuff that we watch, some of the plays I watch with Coach this week are the ones where, you know, Spiller's really the home run hitter, and Freddie Jackson just seems like he's been doing it for
Hey, Zola, last year in his first game as an NFL quarterback, E.J. Manuel played pretty well against the Patriots as New England had to come back and win that game. And now he's no longer the QB. Kyle Orton takes over. In some ways, do you think the Patriots are better fit because Orton's not the mobile guy? There's no zone read. The Patriots could be more aggressive if they want to?
I would think so. And you'd think so for a guy that hasn't played, you know, that much and hasn't played in a while. I think Kyle Orton has played, but he hasn't played in a while. You know, things aren't going to be perfect. And, you know, I thought Manuel played well last year, too, but it's the first time you saw him. And I think the big thing is teams adjust once you get the rookie quarterbacks. And you look at RG3 and what he's going through. And, you know, some of these guys really pounce upon the scene and, you know, get it cranked up. But, you know, it's like that baseball pitcher. You know, you find that rookie pitcher, you haven't faced him. And, you know, you're used to seeing certain pitches. You end up showing, you know, the guy ends up throwing, what, a three-hitter against you. And then next time you see him after you look at some tape, you adjust, you expect the type of pitches. And next thing you know, the guy's out in the fourth inning. So I think that was the case with Manuel. I don't think he really, you know, progressed as that year went on. Kind of stayed the same and didn't really have that great a camp from what I'm told.
Yeah, and can you see the benefit of having an offensive coordinator, even though, you know, he's got to worry about what plays he's going to call this week and shaping his game plan and Josh McDaniels? Is there a benefit to the Patriot defense because he has to know Kyle Orton very well, though Orton's going to be running a different offense. Nonetheless, Orton played for Josh for a couple of years in Denver.
Yeah, I mean, it's, there's been time there, you know, and time has changed. You know, we went through this earlier in the year, you know, talking about Matt Castle. You know, obviously Bill knows Matt, but I think Bill said, too, he's so far out of our system from that point that things are different. He's a different player. We coach differently. So I think a lot's read too much into that. I think, you know, once you get into the game, you kind of forget who the guy is.
How good is the Buffalo defense in your mind?
They're really good on paper. You know, and we see that throughout the league where a team looks really good on paper and just doesn't come together for them. I think Spikes is a liability in coverage, and I think that if you're Tom Brady and you got Tim Wright and Gronkowski and things are looking better and they're more healthier, you got to pray that Brandon Spikes is out there on the field trying to defend them.
Yeah, we know he's a good run stopper, but certainly a liability in pass defense.
Yeah, and I really like Spikes as a player. I think so. Sorry, I'm eating a pickle here. I should be while I'm doing an interview, but couldn't resist it. One of those Vlasic ones, you know, especially in honor of the stork.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the Vlasic pickle that he endorses. I'm kind of on that Route 66 highway, getting behind the stork here and celebrating by eating pickles this week. But, yeah, I love Spikes as a player. He's one of my favorites when he was here. Nicknamed him the Sandman because he knocked guys out. And guarantee Ridley and Vereen are going to have their helmets buttoned up, snapped up just a little bit tighter this week.
All right, well, let's hope the Patriots are getting their kicks running behind 66 this weekend, Zoe.
Great, buddy. Save your money. We're going to Buffalo Chop House, okay?
Buffalo Chop House. So they do have a restaurant that's open past 6 on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, I'll be there. I'll be in bed.
Yeah. All right, Zoe.
All right, buddy.
Take care. Thanks for your time, as always. Scott Zolak with us, of course, Patriots analyst on the Patriots Radio Network, a former quarterback of the Pats, and a guy who, as he mentioned, has been to Buffalo plenty of times and lived to tell about it every single one of those times. And, of course, looking forward to going back there Sunday for the Pats matchup with the Buffalo Bills. I'm going to be joined momentarily by Jackie Britton of Patriots.com. But first, as she works her way into the studio, let's pick up DeMarco, who's been waiting patiently online in St. Louis. DeMarco, how are you today?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing fine today, buddy. About yourself?
We're doing well, much better this week than last.
Yes, yes, I got to say. Well, I was calling early on the radio. I wanted to weigh in about, I think you asked a question about people's side, well, about the front office siding with Tom Brady.
Yeah, that was my predecessor. That was John Rook on his playbook show.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just going to weigh in on it and say that I will have to follow with Brady because the information that Tom Brady has gained, I'm pretty sure he knows just as much as Bill Belichick at this point in time right now. So I will weigh with the person who can actually produce more than just, you know, the psychic part of it, meaning that Brady can go out there and still play. And with him going out there, he know more what he needs being out on the field. So I would say he's more of an asset to the Patriots at this point. And Bill Belichick, his way has gotten us, you know, a good statue right now. He has built a real great foundation in New England, but the game is changing. So if you're not open for new changes and things, and a game that's speeding up now, and I would have to say Brady will be more of a sufficient player or a person who I will go with over Bill Belichick.
All right, DeMarco, I appreciate your interest in your call, your opinion as well. I think from my standpoint, I can only say that I hope that we don't have to cross that bridge for a long time. Hopefully it's later rather than sooner when that opportunity or when that time arrives. But right now it's an opportunity to appreciate both, of course, Belichick and Brady as one of the all-time great coaches and one of the all-time great quarterbacks, if not as many believe in these parts and elsewhere, the best in both categories. Well, Jackie Britton is with me as my partner on Patriots Today, Patriots.com, and Jackie just came from the Patriots locker room and rescheduled press availability today. Things were backed up a bit. The Patriots thought they were going to be in the bubble practicing with rain outside. Instead, it turned out to be a pretty nice day here in New England, to say the least.
Yeah, I was out there at practice with my rain boots on and everything, and it was really pretty out, so that was a good look for me. Cameron Fleming, Nate Ebner, the only two guys still not out there. It's kind of hard to see, though. We only had about, like, I don't know, five-ish minutes, kind of a walk-through, guys just in warm-ups, nothing major. The only thing I was looking for was, you know, McCourty out there, was Revis out there, Hightower, Chandler Jones, and they all were. I mean, granted, it's a walk-through, but still important to note. But those two guys, still the only ones not out there. Bob, I know you're concerned about me, but I have a bandage on my leg, but I am probable for this Sunday, so I'm all set.
And full participation today as well.
Full participation today, yes. So I'm probable.
I've fallen, and I can't get up.
That's not me. I don't know what that's from.
Oh, you don't know. That's right. You're showing your age.
Right,
that's from
I am,
it's from an old television commercial, an old lady in an old television commercial.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately,
I can't read. Yeah.
Unfortunately, there are a couple of us, myself included, who remember that commercial all too well.
I'll have to go look it up. I'll have to Google it on the Teletube or something.
Yeah, and maybe Kevin Collins will work on some more original material in the days ahead for next week's show.
Yeah. Thanks, Kev.
Now you wonder about in-game entertainment at Gillette Stadium. Yeah. Kevin presides over a lot of what you hear and see there.
Yeah. So, this should be interesting game, I think. Different defensively. I'm sure you've already talked about it. But I think that's really one of the biggest points of this game. I mean, they've all seen Fred Jackson, C.J. Spiller 1,000 times before, but the defense is just so much different this time around than it was last year.
Different scheme, a lot of the same players, but Jim Schwartz has taken over, the former head coach of the Lions, now is the Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator.
Right. They're super super productive, certainly at stopping the run. I caught a little bit of Zoe's, the end of his interview, before he went crazy talking about wings. But, the matchup that I'm focusing on is Stephen Ridley, you know, going against Brandon Spikes, and, you know, Stephen Ridley had that lost fumble last year in the opening game, so not to bring anything back, but he's been pretty productive so far this year, and, for a team that had a really good rushing attack against the Bills both times last year, I think that this could really be telling, you know, what happens in there.
Yeah, last year, you may recall, the Patriots wound up beating Buffalo, as we've talked about, coming from behind in week one, but the Pats had a 10-0 lead, and Ridley ran kind of an unforced play, kind of just, he lost his footing, wasn't touched. Left the ball on the ground. Denora Searcy picked it up and ran 79 yards the other way for a touchdown. That got Buffalo back in the game, and the Bills eventually forged ahead.
Right. So I think that's going to be the most the most interesting part to me, you know, just from watching the game. But I don't know. It seemed like everyone in the locker room had moved on as they typically do. Nothing new about that, but just the emotions that, I mean, you know, we're all human, so the emotions that will haunt them on, you know, going back on the road after what happened in Kansas City and, you know, going into a loud stadium that's sure to exist there. Oops, sorry. So there's an emotional element to it that I think that a lot of the players aren't really saying much about. I mean, there were a lot of guys who talked in the locker room today, but kind of a quiet day, though. Not a whole lot, really. They're just, kind of seems like they're all humbled, level-headed, ready to look ahead, and that's pretty much all you're going to get.
Yeah, we're visiting with Jackie Britton of Patriots.com. A different day in that regard, and really a different week for this team, because after the Monday night game in Kansas City, they went to work. In fact, even the previous week, they had an extra day to prepare, and they worked hard on that particular day. And last week, they practiced hard, of course. This week, coming off the victory, Bill Belichick gave them a couple of days off, Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
And then, like you said, today, Wednesday, we've seen them in pads the last couple of weeks. Today, more or less, a walkthrough.
Yeah, today was a walkthrough. I don't know the strategy behind that. I mean, I don't get that. I mean, that's maybe something to ask Belichick, but they're gonna have a fast turnaround next week. I mean, you know, you've got the Sunday night or Sunday game, and then you've got, I mean, in a week you're essentially playing twice, so, you know, and they're both division opponents, they're both big games, so I don't know why the walkthrough was
I think today. That's probably a big part of the reason as well. A team that's banged up a bit, You've got a lot of guys on that injury report, though they were in limited participation today in practice. Nonetheless, you've got a lot of guys that on the defense especially are banged up. Dante Hightower, Jamie Collins with the thigh issue, Devin McCourty and Dominique Easley.
Right.
Darrell Revis left the game with a hamstring injury, although today he is not on the injury report nonetheless. Right. And, you know, for Bill Belichick and his staff, I guess they evaluate from week to week what's best for the team not only this week but moving forward. And you mentioned the two games against Buffalo and the Jets, two division rivals and two teams with a physical defense each.
Yeah, and they really need to start, I mean, separating themselves here. I mean, you know, not, you know, 0-1, I guess, right now, but they've got to start separating themselves, and that starts, like, right now. So, I don't know. It's going to be tough. I haven't really thought of a score prediction yet for this game, but I kind of see it being, like, a lower scoring kind of situation. That's what I think.
You mentioned not a lot of guys today available with the later locker room session.
Right.
Those you did talk to or you heard from, anybody in particular stand out to you?
James Devlin I thought was really good. He just talked about defensively, you know, exactly what we were saying earlier, how they look, you know, different, but pretty much like the same personnel. But, that he was great. Tim Wright had a lot to say about, while I was in there, he talked about, it was Dobson who talked about his blocking. Coach Belichick really raved on him earlier today as just not being, you know, and it kind of goes unnoticed a lot of the times by, you know, media or fans, you know, with Aaron Dobson on the field, you know, expecting to be involved in the passing game heavily. But Coach Belichick was like, no, he had a huge block on, who was it, Ridley or Vereen?
It was the Vereen run, I believe.
Yeah, and so kind of talked to him
Amendola
a little bit.
Had one too.
Yeah, right, and that's, I think, something that's really underappreciated, but... got to talk to Dobson about that, which was good. But I think the overall vibe was, you know, Tim Wright had said, you know, we are on to Buffalo, but we do realize that there is a back-to-back AFC East, you know, matchup here. So we're focusing on Buffalo, but we do realize that that's kind of what's ahead for us the next 2 weeks. And we're prepared. Everybody says they're prepared. They've learned from the Kansas City game. They're ready to move on, and they don't want to make the same mistake twice.
I don't know if you get it, but a lot of people will ask me when you travel with the team, well, what's it like after a loss? What's it like after a win?
Right.
And last week, there was definitely a difference in the locker room,
sure.
I mean, the air, let alone what guys were saying. How can you describe the difference this week from what we experienced like last Wednesday after the Chiefs game?
I mean, it's definitely hard. Like, I hate having to go into the locker room after a loss, especially like the one in Kansas City. I mean, who wants to talk about that? Like, name me one person who wants to sit there and rehash like the most embarrassing moment on Monday Night Football. Like, to explain to me who would want to do that. Like, so I never want to go in the locker room and ask anyone. And there's really no point in being like, oh, well, here was this silver lining. Let's talk about that. So, I mean, there's definitely a different feel and a different vibe. And I would agree. I mean, going into the locker room after on Sunday, was fine and it was comfortable, but there's really not a whole lot of difference. Like, I was expecting the worst when I went into the Kansas City locker room afterwards, just like one word answers, yes, no, I don't know, and really didn't get that. I mean, you got the captains, and all the captains are there for a reason, and they're all stand-up guys, and they fully admit to what went wrong and what happened, and they don't hide behind it. And then when you get the win like last week, which was a big win, then you go into the locker room and you get the same kind of, you know, even-keeled, level-headed, this was good for us, we needed this, but truth is, it's week five. You know, we've still got a long way to go. So there's really not that much of a difference. And the Boston media is really intense and really intimidating. And so it's like, you know, I don't blame them for, you know, being upset after a game and then not wanting to talk to anyone. I mean, who would want to do that? It's like if you have, like, the worst day ever at work, like, who do you want to antagonize you about that, you know? So, but I mean, it's kind of fun, like kind of a unique perspective, you know. I mean, two totally polar opposite games in 2 weeks, you know, but kind of the same type of reactions, you know, afterwards.
Mm-hmm. With Jackie Britton of Patriots Today, patriots.com, you brought up the Boston media. Let's step aside from Patriots talk for just a second, because I'm curious, you're a young professional in this business and someone who hails from Georgia. We've often talked about that on the show. And you come into a marketplace like this where the fans are so passionate.
Right.
And the media, of course, are passionate. And it's a very competitive marketplace. But from your perspective, how has the group of Patriot reporters been to work with, and how have the men and women who cover this team on a daily basis been as professional colleagues to you?
I think that's a really good question. I mean, I have nothing to compare it to in terms of the media size, because this is my first real big, like, you know, gig. But everyone's been really, really nice to work with. I haven't had any problems with anyone. But it is definitely, like, you kind of have to prove yourself, you know? Like, nothing's really given to you. Like, everyone's nice, but, you know, we're all here to do, like, our own jobs. And, you know, at the same time, it's like it gets frustrating sometimes because you want to have some exclusivity as a reporter. You want to kind of develop rapport with players. And it gets hard when you're lumped into a big group, especially when you do the TV side, because the writers can be a little more, you know, sly, and they can kind of just, like, chat with a player. And, you know, when you bring a camera over to a guy, it's like all the cameras just, like, you know, come in, which is fine. I mean, I understand that's the way that the business is, but I mean, it's intimidating. I mean, my first year, I was really intimidated. Like, I had to really, you know, prove myself, and I was nervous, and you have to, you know, make sure you know what you're talking about. And that was key for me, just not being from the area. But I mean, everyone's been great. I'm trying to remember who the first person was that really kind of, like, I think Mike Rodak was the first guy who really kind of, like, introduced himself to me. Mike Reese is up there too, those guys. But just really kind of made me feel, like, comfortable and welcomed. And I mean, everyone did, but they were the first two I remember speaking to, like, immediately right when I got here. So yeah, it's a tough crowd up here.
And Mike Rodak will be on John Rook's show tomorrow, the playbook tomorrow.
All right, yep. He's over with the Bills.
For the Bills, so, yeah. And Mike, of course, learned from the other Mike you mentioned.
That's
Mike
right.
Reese.
Yeah, Mike and Mike. I thought that was, like, the funniest joke for some reason. But it's not that funny, I guess.
All right, Jackie, anything on the horizon this week for you? I know you got a trip to Buffalo coming up. And
yeah.
I unlike Scott Zolak, I mean, mm-hmm. I imagine, you know, being the kind of person you are, a very nice person who looks
thanks.
At things positively,
thank
you're
you.
Looking forward to going to Buffalo.
I am. It'll be a first for me. I'm wondering, you know, I don't think I'm going to have a ton of time to do anything, which I was a little bit, you know, it's kind of a bummer. But I love Buffalo Wings. Love them. I go to Buffalo Wild Wings a lot, which isn't great, but I do, and so I am excited about getting some wings, that's for sure. What are you laughing at, Kevin? But he's shaking his head.
Gabriel's
me.
Gate. Anchor,
is that the place?
Well, Anchor Bar is the more famous place. It's a very touristy place, and I guess if you want to say that you went to the birthplace of Buffalo Wings, Anchor
okay.
Bar is probably the
Anchor
place
Bar?
To go.
All right. I mean, I am
but
a tourist.
Gabriel's so. Gate is very good, too.
Okay. I'm going to have to – what did Zoe say? Did he – I mean, not that I really –
Zoe's a steak.
His opinion
he's a steak and potato guy, so yeah. We're going to the Buffalo Chop House.
Okay, where do you think I should go?
I think you should go to either Anchor Bar or Gabriel's Gate.
Okay,
get some
so you
wings.
Said Anchor Bar
wings.
First, so I'm going to go to Anchor Bar probably.
Only because that is like the traditional
that's the tourist
place that everybody who goes to Buffalo for the first time says, well, I went to the birthplace of the
okay.
Buffalo Chicken Wing.
Okay, I'm excited. That's probably what I'm the most excited about.
I'm excited about
yeah.
it, too. I mean, I hail from... a part of New York State that's not too far from Buffalo, so I feel like
baseball
I...
Baseball state champs! I won't say the year. Okay. Sorry.
I feel like
little,
you know,
little
I can identify
about...
the fabric of the populace there.
There you go, yeah. You got some ties there. Well, I have heard the stadium is kind of like difficult to maneuver a little bit. Do you know? Is that right? And then the service is apparently bad, which is... not going to be great for me when I'm trying to feed video, I think.
Yeah, but. Let's hope it's a lot better because I believe they renovated the press area, and hopefully
okay.
that means the broadcast booths, too. I actually enjoyed it last year. It was my first regular season broadcast, and it was a very small booth, but nonetheless, you're in with the crowd, and it was a great atmosphere, opening day, of course. A loud crowd, very, very into the game from
right.
start to finish. And, of course, it's a game that they have circled on the calendar every year because...
Yeah.
Frankly,
I mean,
the Buffalo Bills fans
right.
don't like the Patriots
right.
very much.
Let's be honest. Yeah, all right, cool. Well, I'm good. I'm ready to go then.
All right, Jackie.
Yeah.
We'll look
Thank
forward
you for
to
having
it.
Me, Bob.
Thanks
appreciate
for,
it.
Thanks for your time.
All right, see
you. Appreciate it as always. Jackie Britton with us. And, you know, mentioned the game last year between the Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. It was kickoff weekend when the Pats went to Orchard Park in 2013 and fell behind eventually after building an early lead. The Buffalo Bills came back and scored 14 points in the second quarter to draw within 17-14, surged in front of the Patriots by a 21-17 score. And then the Pats got a field goal from Stephen Gostkowski to pull within a point. And then the Patriots, of course, completed their rally. And then in Week 17, the Pats beat the Bills on a rainy, cold, windy day to close out the regular season. Let's take a listen back to some of the sounds from both of those games.
Amendola and Edelman split to the near side right. Brady off the shotgun snap. Has a lot of time. Steps up. Fires across the middle. Diving grab by Amendola. What a great catch. And he took a hard hit as he came down at the 27-yard line. Shotgun snap to Brady. Hands it off to Vereen. Runs it left. Carries to the 25. Upfield across the 20. And a dive inside the 15-yard line. Woodwork by Vereen. Patiently bowing back. Outrunning contained. Picking up a first down with another Buffalo timeout. 9 seconds to go. The right knee is down for Ryan Allen. He'll extend the right hand. Gostowski waits. This will be a 35-yard kick straight on. The snap by Aiken. The spot by Allen. The kick by Gostowski. Sailing through the uprights. It is good! And the Patriots take the lead with 5 seconds to go. Season opener in 2013 is in the books. And the Patriots win in Buffalo. First and goal to go for the Pats from the Buffalo 5. Vereen motions to the left slot. Brady short drop. Quick set. Throwing for Vereen. Left flat. Makes the catch. Barreling his way into the end zone. A touchdown for the Patriots.
Bills Mafia.
Dan Carpenter now kicks off left to right with LeGarrette Blount. The field left side 2 yards deep. Runs it past the 10, slants right to the 15. Blount to the 20-yard line. Accelerating past the 25 to the 30. Blount spins away at the 35. Blount, one man to beat to midfield. Chased by Hogan, who knifes him down at the Buffalo 40-yard line. It was LeGarrette Blount for the second consecutive kickoff return, racing into Buffalo territory.
You can't teach burst. And that's what Blount has on both kick returns. I mean, the ability to make people miss for a big guy. And then a jump spin. He hit the L2 button on his PlayStation.
It was cold and it was rainy, you know, and it was hard for a lot of guys to keep their footing. And we just went into the game with the mindset to run the football, you know, and play physical football, and that's what we did.
Blount with his hands on his knees again, the tailback behind Devlin, takes the hand up, runs it left, runs it to the 30, stiff-arming a man down the near sideline of the 10, out of a tackle, diving to the end zone, skidding in for a Patriots touchdown. Have yourself a day, LeGarrette Blount.
Have yourself a piece of beef. I mean, are you kidding me? I got nothing for you.
It was the offensive line. All we have to do is find the holes, you know. And they blocked. They blocked tremendous. They had an amazing game. It was one of our best games yet.
10 seconds and 9. The Pats have beaten Buffalo to cap the regular season, just as they defeated the Bills to begin this campaign in early September. The final today, New England 34, Buffalo 20.
And you heard from LeGarrette Blount, who ran for 189 yards and had touchdowns of 36 and 35, had a couple of kickoff returns worth 83 at 62 for a franchise record, 334 total yards in that 34-20 win over the Buffalo Bills. It sealed the regular season for the Pats with a 12-4 record and also, of course, clinched a first-round bye in the upcoming postseason. 2 weeks later, the Patriots would return to Gillette Stadium and beat the Indianapolis Colts with an 8-0 record in the regular campaign in 2013 at home. And of course, the Patriots now take on the Buffalo Bills for the first time in 2014, and they do it this Sunday at 1 o'clock. And when we continue on the Bob Soucy Show, I'm going to talk to my counterpart John Murphy, longtime voice of the Buffalo Bills, on a very exciting day in Western New York, and maybe in some respects a bittersweet day, as officially the Bills become the property of Terry Pegula, the owner who succeeds the late and legendary Ralph Wilson, the founder of the Buffalo Bills. And Terry Pegula, a Buffalo transplant, a guy from Pennsylvania, originally made a fortune in natural gas, but now is the owner of the Buffalo Sabres and the Buffalo Bills. We'll talk to John Murphy, the voice of the Bills, right after this on the Bob Soucy Show here on Patriots.com.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go. Go. That's it. Come on. Kick it in hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call ** NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99. At a Microsoft store near you.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
All aboard!
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Welcome back to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Tom takes the step, throwing to the near side, catch is made by Vereen, and he's in for a Patriots touchdown!
Have a hot Patriots take? Call Bob on the Ace Ticket hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email him at webradio@patriots.com. Now, here's your host, Bob Soucy.
And welcome back, everyone, of course, with the Patriots at 3-2, getting set to meet the Buffalo Bills. Likewise, at 3-up and 2-down, coming off their come-from-behind victory over the Detroit Lions, sparking a second-half comeback. Kyle Orton completing passes to 10 different receivers, and eventually a grab by Sammy Watkins. Really a sensational play that Bill Belichick said was Larry Fitzgerald-like earlier today, allowing Dan Carpenter to hit the 58-yard game-winning field goal and lift the Bills to the win over the Detroit Lions before Bills defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz was lifted on the shoulders of some of the Bills players and carried across the field after that victory over his former team. Of course, Schwartz, the former head coach of the Lions. And the man who called that game on the Buffalo Bills radio network now joins us, John Murphy. Not only one of the best at what we do, but certainly one of the nicest guys in the league, certainly one of the first to greet me last year. And, John, it's good to talk to you once again.
Good to talk to you, Bob, the pride of Auburn, New York. Everybody loves you in Auburn. I know that.
It's a very small, very tight-knit community, Auburn is. And, John, I know today a lot of people are very proud. I guess there are some bittersweet emotions, I imagine, in Western New York, but nonetheless an exciting day as the Bills become officially the property of Terry and Kim Pegula after 54-plus seasons under the ownership of Ralph Wilson and, of course, the late Patriarch's Trust.
Yeah, Bob, people are really excited. The fans have been excited for really more than a month now when the announcement was made that they'd reached an agreement in principle back on September 9th. So it's just about a month since that became official. Today, the next major step with the approval from the owners, there's still a few I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. There's, as Terry Pegula mentioned today, the small matter of transferring the funds from one bank to another, but that's expected, and it's not a small matter when it's $1.4 billion, by the way. That should happen in the next 24 hours or so, and then I believe that on Friday the Pegulas are going to be in town and get everybody ready. They're going to be in town tomorrow because they own the Sabres, and the Sabres open up their season tomorrow. So, but people are real excited, mostly obviously because the Pegulas have said that the Bills are here to stay, and you can appreciate this as a fellow upstate New Yorker, Bob. For most of my adult life, we've always had hanging over our heads the specter that once Mr. Wilson was gone from the scene, that maybe the Bills might move. Well, that's been removed from the equation now. We don't have to worry about that, and that's huge.
John, give us an idea for those away from that part of the country who really don't sense just what Ralph Wilson meant to the community there. Here was an owner who hadn't been to a home game in several years, who made his home outside Detroit, and yet ensured through various steps that the Bills would stay in Buffalo even after his passing.
Yeah, and he did it very quietly. And for the last, 10 years or so, Bob, before Mr. Wilson passed away, he would not talk about, a plan of succession or what happens to the team. The only thing he said was that the team would be put up for auction, essentially put up for bids, and that's what happened. But what he didn't tell us was that he had a plan in place. First of all, I think the most tangible evidence of that came in December of 2012 when the Bills signed a new 10-year lease for Ralph Wilson Stadium with Erie County and the state of New York, and included with that lease was a very strict non-relocation agreement, made it virtually impossible for the team to move out of Western New York. And, I think there were 60 parties who requested a look at the Bills' papers to see if they wanted to submit a bid. 60, and only three actually did submit bids. So you have to infer that most of those people were scared off by the restricted nature of the non-relocation agreement. So there's that. And then we don't know really officially what sort of instructions Mr. Wilson left with his trust, the four-person trust that was in charge of administering the sale of the franchise. Obviously, they did it they sold the team to an entity that will keep them in Buffalo. And then really is the cherry on the cake. You know, the purchase price is huge, $1.4 billion. The Buffalo News reporting over the last weekend that the Ralph Wilson Foundation, which has been in place for a while, is going to ensure that most of the proceeds or a large chunk of the proceeds from that sale will go towards various charities in Mr. Wilson's hometown of Detroit and his adopted hometown of Buffalo. So it really was kind of a masterstroke by Mr. Wilson to put all these wheels in motion to not only found the franchise and maintain the franchise for 54 years, but to ensure the legacy of the franchise here in Buffalo and Western New York for years and years to come.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Excitement and relief as well for those in Western New York and, of course, here in New England. I guess some relief in that the Patriots don't have to change their song list at the stadium. They can continue to play John Bon Jovi. And now that Terry Pegula is officially the owner and the Bills are going to stay in Buffalo for a long, long time. And he is someone, obviously, with deep pockets. We know what he has done in terms of spending on the Buffalo Sabres payroll. So there's got to be a lot of excitement about that with the Bills moving forward. But also the Bills of the present, 3-2 coming off that come-from-behind win with Kyle Orton at quarterback. How instrumental was he in leading that comeback? Of course, a team that was down on the road. Kyle Orton is a guy who's been around a long, long time. E.J. Manuel was up and down. Orton takes over as the quarterback, finds himself in arrears, and nonetheless comes back and gives Dan Carpenter a chance to win it at the end.
Yeah, he was a big part of it. I mean, make no mistake about it, and you can appreciate this, and you know this Bills team. They're built on their defense, really, and they're outstanding defensively this year, and they've shored up their run defense, which was a big problem last year. So, to me, the best thing about last Sunday's win was that the Bills played horribly in the first half, and Orton had a pick six go against them coming back the other way, and, you know, really not getting anything done offensively, just stayed in the game enough. Thanks to their defense, they were in the game so that once they finally got going offensively, it only took a couple of plays to make the difference. And it was kind of special to see. You mentioned the Sammy Watkins catch earlier on, and obviously a 58-yard field goal was the margin of victory. The fact that the Lions kicker missed three field goals played a major role into it. But those things don't matter if you're not staying in the game. And that defense, which limited Detroit to very limited rushing yardage on the ground and only gave up one touchdown, that defense really is what gives the Bills a chance to win week in and week out, including last week.
John, let's get to that defense. And you mentioned the run defense because last year the Bills led the conference in interceptions as well as sacks. And we see that effect as well with a different scheme under a new coordinator, still getting to the quarterback, still producing interceptions, but vastly improved in the run game. How much of an impact is a good run stopper, linebacker, Brandon Spikes, that we know well, been on that defensive unit?
He's made a good impact, a really good, solid impact. You know, he is not only with his play, but I think his leadership, and you know him a little bit. He's obviously kind of a fun-loving guy, kind of a wild-card guy. I think many of the younger players on this roster respond to that. But, you know, he's playing behind a very good defensive front with Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, and Mario Williams, and even Jerry Hughes, who's having an outstanding season. So those linebackers benefit from the guys up front, but certainly Spikes has played a major role in the Bills being the number two-ranked rush defense in the league right now after being down in the lower third of the league last year in run defense.
So what would you point to in distinguishing what Jim Schwartz is doing as opposed to what Mike Pettine is doing, in particular those guys up front, because it was a very impressive line last year, but Darius is playing exceptionally well. We know that Williams is coming off a knee injury, but nonetheless, he's a very widely respected player in the NFL, Kyle Williams. And, of course, Mario Williams as well.
Yeah, Mario, and a lot of you know, even going back to OTAs and minicamp, there were players, even including Kiko Alonso, who's out for the year, would tell us about how he has many more rules to follow in this defense than he had last year, where last year they were all about attacking and you know, finding the ball and going to the ball. This year I think they're a much more structured defense, which I believe is the reason why they're much tougher to run against this year than they were a year ago. Last year they were all about pressure, creating turnovers, and that succeeded, but they did allow some big plays, especially some big running plays. I mean, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers opened the game with a 75-yard touchdown run against the defense. They gave up quite a few runs like that last year. That hasn't happened this year. They don't give up many big plays at all this year yet. And I think it's just kind of a more sound defense, not quite as attacking, a little bit more zone principles and man-to-man than they played last year. And I think up front, the front seven have many more rules and keys to follow than they did a year ago under Mike Pett.
Have you enjoyed working with Pepper Johnson?
Yeah, he's been fun, you know, especially, you know, once you get into the grind of the regular season, those guys, they all work pretty hard, and I'm sure coaches around the league do. But, yeah, he's fun. He's a breath of fresh air. I think he fits in well with this staff, too.
How about the winning pedigree that those guys bring? I know the Bills have been a proud franchise. We know about the success in the 90s under Marv Levy in particular. And with this Buffalo team trying to reestablish itself as a team atop the AFC East like we became accustomed to a couple of decades ago, to have guys like Spikes, Pepper Johnson, Schwartz, of course, learned to cut his teeth as a scout and a coach under Bill Belichick, have you noticed a difference? This is a team with only 9 players with playoff experience. Has there been some of that winning pedigree wearing off on some of the young guys?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think, you know, one of the things that Doug Marrone's attempted to do in his 2 years here is change the culture, and it's a team, obviously, that hasn't been in the playoffs in 14 years. So bringing in those guys with Super Bowl rings makes a difference. I would not forget about Corey Graham either, a really important addition for the Bills, a guy who came over from the Baltimore Ravens. He's a Buffalo native who came home to play for his hometown team, but, you know, he won a Super Bowl with the Ravens and played a big role in the Ravens Super Bowl win a couple of years ago. And they're just sprinkled on the roster, a couple of guys like that, as you said, 9 of them with playoff experience, but pretty significant experience and leaders. And it should be noted that both Corey Graham and Brandon Spikes are captains on this team in their first year on the roster. Spikes on defense and Corey Graham on special teams. So they do play a leadership role, and I think players look to them for leadership and what it takes to be a winner in the NFL.
We're chatting with John Murphy, the voice of the Buffalo Bills, and to backtrack as well into the spring and talk about the offense once again for Buffalo. Doug Whaley, general manager, Russ Brandon, the team CEO at the time, very aggressive. They made deals in the offseason, including, of course, on draft day to acquire Sammy Watkins with the 4th pick. They gave up a lot to get that 4th pick from the Cleveland Browns, but the early returns look good. How dynamic is he?
He's great. I mean, he really is. And, you know, I think he has benefited already from the quarterback switch from E.J. Manuel to Kyle Orton. I think even after the first practice last week with Orton as a quarterback, Sammy Watkins was talking about Orton's decisiveness and getting through his reads and throwing the football and the ball coming out on time and in the right spot. And Watkins is great. I mean, you overpay when you want to get a difference maker like that. And I think Sammy Watkins has potential to be a difference maker in the league maybe for a long, long time. And as you said, your coach referred to him as, you know, that catch anyway is sort of a Larry Fitzgerald-type catch. But you're going to overpay, whether it's, you know, for difference makers, whether it's in free agency with the money or in the draft. And they paid a dear price, you know, a couple of first-rounders to move up and get Sammy Watkins. But I think they're pretty happy with the returns on that investment so far.
And, John, when the Bills dealt for the Philadelphia Eagles, Bryce Brown, I guess some may have wondered, what about the future of a guy like Fred Jackson, a veteran that the Patriots have tremendous respect for, along with C.J. Spiller? And yet those two guys have been their same old selves, it seems, catching and running out of the backfield. Are they as good as they've ever been?
Yeah, I mean, C.J., I think, has not had a great start, and a lot of it's been opportunities for C.J. Spiller. And I think C.J., they're so different. You know, C.J.'s a dynamic, game-breaking type of running back, and Fred Jackson has become, in these last 3 or 4 years, a really good, tough, between-the-tackles, yard-catcher, contact-type runner. My broadcast partner, Mark Kelso, always talks about Fred Jackson's vision, and he maintains that vision is a really underrated and critical value for a running back to have, and he thinks Fred Jackson's got just great vision to see where the hole is, identify it quickly, and get there. And Fred's had a couple of really good games, a couple of really big plays. He's an important part of the passing game as well when it comes to catching passes and blitz pickup. CJ is the game breaker. CJ had 108 yard kickoff return a couple of weeks ago, and he's got that kind of dynamic potential. And I think they're a good 1-2 punch. How long, you know, after this year they both stay remains to be seen. That's why they went out and got Bryce Brown. But I think, you know, they were one of the top running attacks in the league last year, and they're not quite at that pace this year. But I think they'll get there over the course of the season. I think they'll be right up near the top again.
And, John, the offensive line has held up well thus far. What's the biggest reason for the improvement there?
Well, I mean, they've had injuries. Chris Williams was the free agent who came over this year, was the starter at left guard for a couple of weeks, and they actually have two rookies in the starting lineup now with Chris Williams out with a back. He was limited in practice today, but You know, they have a starter at the guard spot in Cyril Richardson, fifth-round draft pick out of Baylor, and another starter at right tackle in Chantrell Henderson, a late seventh-rounder. Henderson has been a revelation, the guy who I think what most people say was the highly recruited prospect coming out of a high school in Minneapolis, and he wound up at the University of Miami, ran into some problems down there, off-field issues. The Bills fire on him in the late seventh round, and so far, you know, they plugged him into the starting lineup and let him go. He was the left tackle during training camp, and Cordy Glenn was out with an injury. Glenn is back now, I think, one of the most underrated offensive linemen in the league at left tackle, Cordy Glenn, and Chantrell Henderson's, filled in, done quite well at right tackle. Eric Wood in the middle, who's a pretty solid player year in and year out. So, you know, there's some improvement to come. They've been up against some really brutal defenses. J.J. Watt and the Texans a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. and, of course, Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley and those guys last week in Detroit. But there's improvement to come, but I think they probably have the makings of a pretty good offensive line core for the next couple of years anyway.
With John Murphy, the voice of the Bills, last couple of minutes, with the play-by-play voice of Buffalo Bills football. And, John, this game, an important one for both teams. Certainly Patriots trying to build on their performance Sunday night. Bills, of course, with an opportunity at home in the wake of this exciting news today with the transition to Terry Pegula. How big is this game for the Bills, metaphorically as well as literally?
It's big. I mean, it's funny. You know, I'm here today. Some of the people we work with here with the Bills are in New York today for the ownership transfer news, and it's kind of like two fronts, different stories coming out of the two fronts here, but the focus here in the locker room and among the coaching staff, the focus here was on, yeah, it's great news, the new owners are coming in, we've got a huge football game coming up, and they do. I mean, it's first place on the line, and you are accustomed to those type of games in Foxborough. We are not in recent years here in Western New York. So first place is on the line, you know, I don't have to tell you that the Patriots are not the beloved team here in Western New York, so that adds to it. And there's all that plus the new owners who are coming in. And it's sort of like many people think of this Sunday as, you know, the second home opener for the Bills, second opening day, because with new owners coming in and with everything on the line, I think it's going to be one of those great atmospheres and what I consider to be one of the great venues in the NFL, Ralph Wilson Stadium.
Absolutely. We talked a little earlier about Brad and Spikes, who as a Patriot last year said he was a nonconformist, and I'm sure he is appreciating his freedom of expression in Buffalo a lot more than some of the restraints on social media here with the Pats. But I do recall a tweet that he sent out very early in his tenure as a Buffalo Bill after signing with the Bills, something about two wins over New England in the coming season. So apparently he's made a prediction long ago. Are you willing to go out there and make a prediction for Sunday too?
No, I'm not ready to say, you know, and you can appreciate this. I've really just started to dig into this game, you know, starting last night, and obviously impressed with what I saw of the Patriots this past Sunday night, and, I know some bumps in the road. I watched the opener in Miami, too, so I know it's going to be a tough game, and I think it's going to be a great game, and it's going to be a really good atmosphere in the stadium. People are really pumped up and excited that it's a divisional rival and very excited that the new owners are coming in. I don't know how it's going to turn out. I think it's going to be a really good game, though.
John, I'm excited, too. As you mentioned at the top, I'm from Central New York, and I really appreciate how much people care about the Buffalo Bills in that part of the state in particular. But it's a great opportunity for both teams. I think, as you mentioned, the stage is set at an exciting time for Buffalo football, and I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to see you again.
Me, too. I can't wait. Okay.
All right, John, thanks so much. John Murphy with us, the voice of the Buffalo Bills. And again, on Sunday afternoon, he'll be calling the game for the Bills Radio Network. And I'll be joined by Scott Zolak with the call on our flagship in Boston, 98.5, the Sports Hub, and our affiliates throughout New England. Again, with a kickoff at 1 o'clock. It'll be nice, too, to have a kick early in the afternoon after playing these Monday night and Sunday night games. And, of course, getting home in the wee small hours in the case of Kansas City, and just short of that after last Sunday's home game against the Cincinnati Bengals. We heard from John Murphy, the voice of the Bills, talking about the magnitude of this game and the week for the Buffalo Bills franchise, of course. A reopener at Ralph Wilson Stadium after Terry Pegula today was voted unanimously by his now fellow NFL owners as the new owner of the Bills, the approval of the sale for $1.4 billion. He spoke to the media. He didn't want to take questions initially, but he did pause at least for a moment or two to answer a couple of queries that came his way.
It goes back further than you may think. I obviously, when I was asked when I bought the Sabres, are you interested in the Bills? You expect me to say yes, I can't, you know. But it goes back further than you may imagine.
You think you got a good deal?
I got a hell of a deal.
They said, I got a hell of a deal. I own the team for $1.4 billion, most ever spent on an NFL franchise. And again, consider that when Ralph Wilson founded the Bills as part of that foolish club, it was a $25,000 investment. And as recently as 2013, Forbes magazine estimated the Bills' value at $870 million. And now Terry Pegula spends $1.4 billion as the guy who made most of his money in the natural gas industry on the Buffalo Bills. And there is already talk about the Bills trying to generate the momentum as well as the money for a downtown stadium. For head coach Doug Marrone, he was put in a very unenviable spot this past offseason, of course, with the Bills going up for sale after the death of Ralph Wilson. Being a second-year head coach, trying to turn the program around sooner rather than later with someone's fate in question as a coach, knowing that there's going to be an ownership change. And Marrone, a guy who was a Syracuse University lineman, coached in the NFL, went back to his alma mater, turned around the Syracuse football program for a short while with a blue-collar attitude, and has really embraced the Western New York culture and try to change the culture of the Buffalo Bills. He was asked in his press conference yesterday about the magnitude of this week in Buffalo Bills franchise history, knowing that the sale would be approved, and of course the Bills would have to play a huge game against the Patriots.
Well, obviously, you know, there are things going on. You know, in New York, the owners are getting together, obviously, to approve the sale of the team. You know, we understand that. I think there's a lot more things going on the outside, but on the inside, you know, we're preparing to do our best to go out there and win a football game. So from that standpoint, it really hasn't changed anything for us.
And the Bills are preparing without E.J. Manuel at quarterback and now with Kyle Orton at quarterback. In the case of Manuel, criticized in his first year plus as the starter for the Bills, although he was hurt a lot last year, had three separate knee injuries, two on one knee, one on the other. So he missed a lot of time. Remember, he didn't play in the season finale against the Patriots a year ago after playing pretty well in the season opener in 2013. But nonetheless, issues about his accuracy, questions about his judgment, often making safer throws than many felt warranted in the situations that he was put in, checking down a lot, some thought prematurely, rather than going through his progressions. And so the Bills operating inconsistently on offense, despite the effort to put a lot of talent around him. And it's not just the aforementioned Sammy Watkins at wide receiver, but a young guy drafted early last year like Robert Woods. And, of course, knowing that they have two backs who are very good in the run game as well as the passing game like Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller. So with the Bills making those investments, including the offensive line acquisitions through the draft, taking Kwanjo from Alabama and the aforementioned Richardson from Baylor, and trying to give E.J. Manuel a lot of weapons at his disposal, again, an up-and-down start to 2014. So Doug Marrone made the call last week to go to the veteran Kyle Orton, who had been with the Dallas Cowboys a year ago, you'll recall, started that season finale for the Cowboys, a loss to Philadelphia, and then was, by his request, let go by the Cowboys before signing relatively late with the Buffalo Bills. Last week made a start, gave up a pick six to the Detroit Lions. Bills fell behind, but Orton passed for more than 300 yards. First time a Bills quarterback has done that in several years since Ryan Fitzpatrick did it against the New England Patriots in 2011. And here's what Doug Marrone had to say about Orton and his impact on the offense last week and looking ahead to this Sunday.
Well, I thought he made, you know, obviously some throws, you know, to Goodwin, to Hogan, when we were first and 30. You know, obviously we got the ball to Robert over the middle. So, you know, I think it started off a little bit tough, you know, for someone, you know, just getting back in there again. But I thought he played well. He did. But, you know, now the focus is to make sure that everyone around him gets better. There are a lot of things on that tape that, you know, we don't want to put out there, you know, in our running game and doing a better job up front. I thought the tackles did a nice job in pass protection against two very good defensive ends. I think inside, we weren't able to get up on the linebackers, and when we did, we were getting split on the doubles, and we've got to do a better job of that.
Doug Marrone, head coach of the Buffalo Bills. This is year number two for him. For the Bills, of course, the quest continues. Try to get back to the postseason for a long, long time. The last time the Buffalo Bills won a playoff game, it was a matchup in a wild card round of Jim Kelly and Dan Marino at quarterback. That's how long it's been for the Buffalo Bills. Again, they've been in a string of losing seasons. They have been in the lower half in the AFC East more than in the upper division. Looking up at the Patriots, of course, who have dominated the division through the years and last season swept the season series from Buffalo, albeit with a very tight affair settled in the final seconds, coming from behind by the Pats with a Steven Gostkowski field goal to seal it with 5 seconds to go before LeGarrette Blount had that huge day in the rain and wind in Foxborough, and the Patriots eventually rolled over the Bills in Week 17. But Buffalo, as mentioned, brimming with a lot of confidence. The stage has been set, and a very exciting time for Buffalo Bills football. And the Sunday matchup will mark the first for the Bills not under the ownership of Ralph Wilson or his family's trust. And so the Terry Pegula era begins. The Doug Marrone era continues. So does the Kyle Orton era for the Buffalo Bills at quarterback. And the Pats will try to win their second straight contest, coming off a very impressive performance at home against the Cincinnati Bengals. And we'll bring it to you on the Patriots Radio Network, on our Boston flagship station, 98.5 The Sports Hub, and our affiliates across New England. And we'll talk about it next Wednesday on another edition of the Bob Soucy Show here from 4 to 6 on Patriots.com. And, of course, we thank you for tuning in today, logging on. And we as well thank all of you who've downloaded the podcast and will continue to listen to us in the days ahead. For my producer, Kevin Collins, this is Bob Soucy. Again, Sunday at 1, it's Patriots and the Buffalo Bills. Looking forward to that matchup in the AFC East and looking forward to having you back next Wednesday here on Patriots.com. So,
thanks for listening to the Bob Soucy Show, exclusively on Patriots.com radio.
Sets up with a throw to the right side, catch made by Edelman, turns to the end zone, and he runs it past the five, he dives to the end zone, touchdown, and the lead for the Patriots.
Bob will be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with the latest news and reaction from this week's game, as well as a preview of the Patriots' next opponent.
Hand off to Ridley, runs it right, Ridley dives to the goal line, he's in again, touchdown, Patriots.
Log on to Patriots.com anytime to find the latest Bob Soucy Show podcasts, as well as the very latest news and information on your favorite team.
Shotgun snap to Manning, play fake, a throw to the near side, ball picked off by Logan Ryan. Diving, break on the ball.
He's got it.
As he stepped in front of Eric Decker.
He's got it.
Patriots take over.
This place is berserk.
We look forward to hearing from you on the next edition of the Bob Soucy Show.